a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
This is 98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Yes, good morning, good morning. You're very welcome to another edition and a very special edition of Now That's What I Call Sport here on Dublin's 98FM. My name is Jamie Moore. This week, the Irish football family lost another member as 16-year-old Izzy Dazoo collapsed and died while playing for Shelburne on Tuesday night. We're going to remember him with his former manager Dave Collins, who tells me about lots of sleepless nights for anyone who had the misfortune of trying to mark Izzy on pitches in Dublin up and down the country on a Sunday morning.
He wouldn't have slept well the night before again if you were marking Izzy. He was just a great team player and a great lad. You know, all the boys just loved him and loved his attitude.
Yeah, we're going to ask why so many young people are simply dropping dead on our football pitches and if we can do anything to make them safer and stop it. The FAI's medical director, Dr. Alan Byrne, will be here.
This is not a common event. It's a very tragic event, but it's not a common event. And unfortunately, some of the causes for sudden cardiac death, we don't know what those causes are.
And we'll be joined by a fantastic lady called Loya Ayatigbo, whose son Shay died on a football pitch while playing for Belvedere in May 2015. She'll tell us about the horrible phone call she got and then having to rush to the hospital.
Going to the hospital was like, oh, don't worry, he's going to get up. He's just tired. And they said, we have to talk to you. And I said, just let me see him. I didn't register to my mind what she was trying to say. And she said, they've tried everything. He's not responded to it.
Now, Lola also wants to find Izzy Dazoo's family and help them in any way she can. More on that very soon. Let's get the show on the road.
98FM.
Yes, we're going to have our full 30-minute tribute to Izzy. We're going to hear from Lola, Dr. Alan Byrne and Dave Collins very soon indeed, so stay tuned for that. First, though, the Gaelic Voices for Change and a number of inter-county stars from both the All-Ireland winning Dublin men's and women's football teams spent the night sleeping on O'Connell Street to highlight the homelessness problem here in Dublin. And off the balls, Oisin Langan spent the night with them. First up is the new Dublin hurling manager, Pat Gilroy.
Well, here on the streets of Dublin with Dublin senior hurling manager and former Dublin football manager Pat Gilroy. Pat, you have brought yourself and indeed the whole squad out for the Gaelic Voices for Change. Stand against homelessness and support of homeless people. Talk to me about your reasons for doing that.
I think, you know, you look at this and you look at the way our society is and the way the economy has gone over the last number of years. Like, it's just not acceptable for us to accept homelessness and the way it's growing. I mean, if it was shrinking, you'd say, right, that's grand, but it's not. It's just not good enough. And I think, you know, as a society, we need to, I suppose, support those people who are vulnerable and who can't support themselves and do whatever little bit anybody can do to try and raise the awareness around it and you know, people who can help, that they will then go and do something about this. Because I think, you know, you have a million people here and probably most people are doing okay at the moment. And if everybody does just a little bit, it'll make the difference.
And I guess you wanted to get your squad involved and yourself involved because you know yourself, if people see GAA players doing it and inter-county people doing it, they might follow because the GAA is a powerful voice and inter-county teams are a powerful voice.
Yeah, and you know, we're very lucky, we're very privileged to be in the positions where you're getting to represent your county in something like this, where we don't have to think about where we're going to sleep at night and where, you know, the next dinner is going to come from. So it's nice to be able to maybe use that influence to try and encourage more people to get involved and try and deal with this. It's a very complex issue. It's not a simple issue that money is going to solve, but it's a society issue. It's a big issue for us all to somehow find a way to solve it. It's not just a government problem, it's everyone's problem, and it's something that, you know, I think everyone will be a happier person to say you're walking through town and not see people sleeping in the doorway.
And I think it's pretty cool that you're encouraging your players to care about things, to have a social conscience, because a lot of managers just want their players to be robots.
You know, there's so little we had to do to get them to go over there. They really wanted to do this themselves, and they're very good lads. Like the footballers, I mean, there's a lot of footballers here tonight as well. They do a huge amount. They do understand that they've a role bigger than the football. I mean, obviously, and hurling, and you know, they're very good like that. They give a lot back to the community as well as you know, they're representing the county, but they do understand how important that is.
That's the new Dublin hurling boss, Pat Gilroy, speaking to Off the Ball's Oisin Langan, who also caught up with former Dublin footballer Eamon Fennell, who's one of the main men in organising the events of last night in the Gaelic Voices for Change and their sleep out to highlight homelessness.
Well, it's just after 5 o'clock in the morning. We're still at the GPO for the Gaelic Voices for Change sleep out. Eamon Fennell, who helped organise, well, the whole thing, but especially what was done in Dublin is with me. Eamon, you've been awake all night. As we can see, there's still people trying to sleep or maybe even actually getting some sleep in the background. Eamon, what do you feel you've achieved by doing this evening?
I think we've achieved a great deal of awareness towards the situation that is already there, but also for the Gaelic Voices for Change brand, about trying to get all these people and the other people around the other counties more involved in Gaelic Voice for Change. The big part of this was we had to learn a bit more about it, and to learn a bit more about it we had to sleep on the streets. So hopefully now whoever's sleeping here and has attended all over the country will get more involved and will help us make a change.
What do you feel you've learned? And I know it seems like a silly question because we're sleeping out for one night, we had teas, we had coffees, we had facilities, we had each other, yeah. We had security. But something can be learned. It maybe has rammed home the point a bit more.
Yeah, I think the real learning for me was like trying to sleep on this street when there's so much chaos going around. It's near impossible to do so. Like, you know, when you have all the traffic, you have all the noise coming from down the street, all the late night revelers out. We have a few homeless guys in here and all they wanted was just a bit of security. They just wanted to be in with us so they had a bit of security for a night's sleep. And to me, that was the biggest learning thing, that like when we all came together, all they wanted to do was just be beside us, and just that was it, and just get some good night's sleep, like, you know. So that's what I'll take away from it anyway.
Where does this movement go from here? Because I think it's fair to say it has sparked something among GAA people, and I don't just mean inter-county players, I mean GAA people and people in general, but especially the GAA community who you've reached out to.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not too sure where it goes from this, but it does have to go somewhere, and it has to go somewhere very quick. This can't be a flash in the pan job. Like, you know, this was too big. There was too many people that got behind this, and we've achieved so much. If we do nothing else until 2018, when we do this again, it'll be very sad. Like, in order for us to make a real change, we have to keep being proactive. We have to keep engaging with everyone that's here, and we have to keep pushing it through our social channels as much as possible.
Eamon, thank you very much. It's 5 o'clock in the morning on O'Connell Street.
Oisín Langan from Off the Ball, thank you very much. And the guys from the Gaelic Voices for Change have already raised an incredible €176,000. You can see those videos of Oisín talking to a load of people on O'Connell Street last night at Off the Ball on Facebook and Twitter for more on that. Now, we just heard a moment ago from the new Dublin hurling boss, Pat Gilroy. His coaching staff was announced a few weeks back, and among them, the former Galway hurling manager, Anthony Cunningham, who guided Galway to a Leinster title in 2012 and two All-Ireland finals before leaving the job in 2015. He's been chatting to Off the Ball's Will O'Callaghan and began by telling Will how he got involved with Dublin.
Well, I suppose, you know, in September, October, November, there were probably moves afoot on that there was going to be a new manager, and Pat gave me a bell and asked me would I be interested in supporting the management team. And I suppose with Pat's pedigree and, you know, the success he's had and his reputation, is, you know, I would have known that and probably done a small bit of work with him back a few years ago. But for me, that was, you know, it was an easy question to answer, really. Would I get involved? Because for me, Dublin hurling, you know, have the potential to go and break through to a top four team and get a chance as well to work with the Dublin players and Pat and his management team. You know, that's a great honour, really, for me, you know, to be asked and to be able to contribute.
It's a very interesting management team as well, because, you know, the other members of the management team have obviously had All-Ireland football success. There's winners among that management team there.
Absolutely, and already I think we see that in training in the organisation, and I've been very, very impressed with the management team. They're able to coach, they're able to entice players, they're able to push players, and, you know, that's a great experience to have. And the organisation, the passion, the management and his style, and yeah, his knowledge of hurling is really, really top class, and that's going to bear fruits, we hope. We're all there on trial, and you're judged by your success on the field. So it's early days yet, and the honeymoon is probably over now, but there's going to be tough days ahead, there's no doubt. But, you know, there's ability. You know, Coola, for example, are having a great run at club level, and we wish them well. And but we have enough of other guys to work on and to improve and to get them to a level that they can seriously challenge.
Your title, I think, is hurling coach. What's your day-to-day involvement with the team then?
Well, I suppose it's part of the management team, but yeah, heavily involved in coaching and heavily involved in working with the players. But no different to Pat and to Sean and Paddy Donoghue. And I suppose Mickey Whelan brings huge experience as well as a hugely experienced person around sports teams and fitness levels and, you know, what it entails. So we all have our roles to fill, and for me it's just as I said, an honour and great to be involved in coaching on the pitch, and that's what I really love.
Is that coaching what you really enjoy? Because last years you've been in coaching with some clubs and with some county teams. People would be expecting maybe you to go back into management. Is it coaching rather than management that tickles your fancy at the moment?
Well, either, but for me, I suppose it's to get asked, and it's an honour always to be involved with an inter-county team. But yeah, I mean, I just love going training, being in the buzz, having the buzz, and being on the pitch with the players and working with players and seeing them develop. To me, that's of huge significance and of huge enjoyment, really.
You obviously see good potential in this Dublin team then.
Well, I think Dublin, with the work that's gone on at underage, with the coaching that's gone on in the clubs and with the push the clubs have brought on the hurling side, you know, it's now getting up to the level that it's there on the football side. I think everybody saw Dublin's under 17 team this year, very, very skillful. They were like a Kilkenny or a Galway or a Tipperary minor team. And that's proof that, you know, the coaching is working. So definitely over the next few years, I think the produce coming through are very, very strong and will rival any county. And I think Dublin needs it as well, because of the amount of players that are in Dublin. There's only 15 that can start on any football team in any county, and I think Dublin clubs will need a very strong outlet, and they'll need an inter-county team. The Dublin senior hurlers doing very, very well to have that attraction and draw as well.
Because the feeling would be the team has probably underachieved a bit in the last years after winning the Leinster title, which many felt would be the springboard to something more.
Yeah, I suppose tremendous work by Anthony Daly, but also very good work by Gerard Cunningham. Probably dipped last year, but you will get those years. There'll be up and down times, but we'll be hoping for a kickback this year and to take it up a couple of more notches, because definitely we would see that the ability is there.
Would the feeling be that you can be competitive against the very top counties in the coming year?
Well, you'll have to be. I mean, you're not going to be in the Leinster Championship if you don't feel that you can win every match. We're no different to any other county. We'll want to be there and want to win. But, you know, the level that every other county is at, the top 8 or 10 counties now, I think they're very, very close, but you'll have probably the Kilkennys and the Wexfords and Tipperary's and definitely Galway, who are the team to beat now. You know, people expecting that they're a notch ahead, but there's very little between the teams in my view, and we'll be trying to close that gap.
Just to ask you about the league, first of all, because, I mean, Dublin, obviously, you want to hit the ground running. We're looking at Davy behind us there. They did last year and got promoted on the back of it. You've got a very narrow window to be in peak condition for the end of January compared to where you would have been starting 2 or 3 weeks later normally.
Yeah, it's the same for every other team, so that's why you think it's quite condensed these few weeks. It's pre-season to get fitness levels up, get your strength levels up, and you know, for Dublin also we want to see as many players as we can. So it's probably a bit more work there where, say, in other counties that have sitting management teams, they probably know their players better. But there's no doubt we want to throw the net out there and try and find maybe a new con. Okay. Yeah, for us, it's about trying that. And early parts of the Welsh Cup will be used to look at a lot of players as well.
I get the feeling from what you've said, it's not a case of setting massive goals down. It's just an ambitious group who want to do well next year.
Well, look, we'll always have our internal goals and our dreams there, really. But it'll be one day at a time for us, to kick off well in the league and be strong in the league, and to really put the net out there and to get players established on the team, and hopefully with the emphasis will be on strong performances in the league that'll prepare us well for the Championship.
Anthony, enjoy the Christmas. Hopefully there's no snow on the ground when you play in the Bord na Mona series in the new year, and best luck to you with Dublin.
Thanks, Will.
We're going to move on to That's What I Call Sport here on Dublin's 98FM. And Leinster made it 4 wins from 4 in the European Champions Cup yesterday with victory over the Exeter Chiefs. But they didn't have things all their own way, Derek.
No, Jamie, a tough clash with them at the Vivi yesterday, has to be said. A nightmare start, really. Exeter were 17-3 ahead by the half an hour mark. And also Leinster had lost Johnny Sexton as well to a head injury by that time as well. But Easton Atewa brought it back to 17-9 by a half time, and further penalties again in the second half, as well as a late try, Luke McGrath going over with 15 minutes to go, helping Leinster eke out a superb 22-17 points comeback win. A great win for them. And like I say, it makes it 4 wins out of 4 for them. After the game, offtheball.com's Dave McIntyre spoke to Leinster head coach Leo Cullen.
Leo, what a scrap that was. Great to come out the right side of the result, but how do you think your team played today?
Very, very mixed, I have to say. Very, very mixed. You lose Johnny after 2 minutes. You can see the try in the first 2 minutes. So you're 7-0 down. Then Ross Byrne comes on. He goes off after 6 minutes. So East is playing 10. And luckily, Ross comes back on, so we're okay there. And, you know, it's a massive experience for him coming in, you know, up against the team, Premiership champions. And we're having to dig ourselves out of a hole. You know, a couple of ill-disciplined points as well for us in the first half where we lose two guys to the bin. We just have to manage our way where we're having to chase the game. So that was probably the biggest thing. You know, we discussed it yesterday, you know, some of those situations about if we are in that scenario where we do fall behind. So I thought we were reasonably controlled. Once we sort of managed to hold on to the ball for an extended period, because we couldn't get it off extra for the first 30 minutes, but 5 minutes before halftime, we just managed to get a little bit of pressure back on them. A couple of penalties before halftime were very important. And then we just had to keep chipping away in the second half, even though we get over in the corner, gets held up, so comes back for the penalty. And again, it was one of those decisions where I think it was good decision to take. We just take the points and rebuild again, and eventually we got that opportunity where Dan Levy gets an offload and gets his hands free and gets the ball away to Luton guys. So it was far from perfect game, you know, but at least there was some good characteristics on show.
So you're at the top of the pool finally, 4 wins from 4, and you couldn't have asked for anything more. Is the ambition now to make sure you see this through and get a home quarter final, or do you think there's still work to be done before you can start worrying about that kind of stuff?
We turn our attention really now, because we've three Pro 14 games in 11 days over Christmas, so you know we're going to be stretched during this period. You know, we'll use the squad try and get ourselves through and try and stay in good shape, and we'll see round 5 game against Glasgow first in the RDS, and hopefully we'll get a big crowd. We won't be able to squeeze all 40,000 into the RDS, but hopefully we'll have a full house. We'll just try and get as many points as we can from that game, and you know, at least we know where we stand then going into our final game.
The Leinster head coach Leo Cullen speaking to Off the Balls, Dave McIntyre. You are very welcome back. It's Jamie Moore here, 27 minutes past 9 on Sunday morning here in Dublin. Now, for the next half an hour, we're going to be paying tribute to Izzy Dizou, the 16-year-old Shelburne striker who very, very sadly collapsed and died while playing for Shelburne against St Kevin's Boys in the AOL Complex on Tuesday night. It's a story that has captured Dublin and captured the nation, and he's not the first young teenager who has unfortunately died on our football pitches. So we're going to speak very soon to Loya Ayatigbo, whose son Shay died while playing for Belvedere back in 2015. Dr. Alan Byrne, the medical director of the FAI, will be along to try and give some context on exactly why these young men are simply dying on our football pitches. But first, it's a man called Dave Collins from Cherry Orchard Football Club, who managed Izzy for 5 years. I caught up with Dave over the weekend. Dave, just bring us back to when you first knew him. We know he played for St. Pat's as a very young schoolboy, and then he moved to you at Cherry Orchard. He's a very successful team and lots of successful years there up until last season when you know, you would have finished with that team and he would have moved on to Shelburne, but you would have worked with him for a number of years from when he was quite young.
Yeah, well, listen, as soon as Izzy came up to the lawns, we knew he had a chance. He had an older brother, had a couple of older brothers, one with Shelburne and one with played with Cherry Orchard as well. And they were fantastic players, and Izzy was just another off the production line. You knew he was going to be a player. He was an athlete. He came up. His attitude was excellent straight away, and he just wanted to be there. He wanted to be a footballer. And when you see a young kid like that, 10 years of age, who has that desire so early, you just know that's somebody you want to work with and try to help along their way. So we were delighted to get him in and get him into the group. When he did become part of the group, his personality and everything on top of that was just a huge bonus to his natural ability.
Yeah, it's something I would have seen him play in the last year where I watched the team he would have worked with a number of times. And for those who haven't seen him as a footballer, Dave, he was very quick, very powerful, very strong. And any schoolboy defence knew if Izzy Dizou was playing against them, they were in for a tough Sunday morning.
Yeah, you wouldn't have slept well the night before a game. If you're American Izzy, you know you're going to have to work hard that day. You're going to have to chase the lines. You're going to have to chase them behind. And his link-up play was excellent. He was what I would call a selfless player. Some of the players would have got a bit more glory because of the hard work that he'd done. he done the stuff that a lot of centre forwards don't want to do. And he was brilliant at it. He set the tone for the whole team. If your centre forward is willing to work as hard as that and show that attitude, then everybody has to follow suit. He was just a great team player and a great lad. You know, all the boys just loved him and loved his attitude.
I think it's something as well that people don't really think about too much is the bond and the connection that these young people and young players have together, but also the parents on the team. And I know I've spoken to a couple of parents this week of other players who were on the team, and they're devastated. I know you're devastated as the person who would have managed the team along with Padraig Fitzpatrick in recent years as well. And you know, that's something that it brings people together, that you all have, even though he's gone, you all have had and still will have that connection with each other through him.
Yeah, it will always be there, and it's not unique to our team. It's in every club. It's at the Belvedere's, the Shamrock Rovers, the Joey's, all these clubs. They all have it. They all have their groups. There's great people running these teams, managers and coaches. And you know, you really are an important person in these young lads' lives. They grow friendships. You're seeing them 3 nights a week training. You're together maybe twice the weekend. You're seeing them, most days of the week, and they're becoming a real tight group. We were very fortunate in the group that we got together. We stayed together as a group for a long time. We won together and we lost together, which was vital. You have to win and lose, and that's the whole learning process, and that's what makes them grow and develop into young men, even outside football. And they were just a great group of young men that have, and you can see how they've come together this week, where they're trying to organise teams, they're being in touch with each other. It's just absolutely so proud of them, and Izzy would be so proud of them and how they're behaving and what they're doing, you know.
And I'm sure his parents as well, I don't know if they were at the game, but I know his dad was apparently at every match he ever played for you guys in Cherry Orchard as well. And it's unimaginable to think, you know, they go to watch him play a football match, and in one football match in the last match of the year before Christmas. I think he would have died 13 days before Christmas, for the parents too, Dave, who I know you know well. We can only send our thoughts and prayers to them as well.
Yeah, Robert and Julia was fantastic people. They got the kid up to all his training sessions. He never missed a training session, always up there, always at his matches, and the most awkward places at times and awkward times. But, you know, you go to the All-Irelands, you could be travelling to Cork or Donegal, you could be in Galway, and Robert would turn up, he'd be there. We always went on trips, we went on tours to England, we played in the Mill Cup, always supported the kid, as all the parents do at that level of sport. You know, we all make that effort, and we all do that, and Robert was as good as anybody. He was there, and he had all the children and younger, so he used to take them, and you see him at other matches and around. He was always around, and a great character walking around the pitches, and great, great man.
The voice of Dave Collins there from Cherry Orchard, who managed Izzy Dizoo for 5 years. I'm in an extended version of that interview with Dave. It'll be on 98fm.com in the podcast section just after 10 a.m. this morning. 98FM. I'm going to be joined on the line by Dr. Alan Byrne, who's the medical director and Ireland senior team doctor with the FAI, and he's also a consultant sports and exercise medicine expert in the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. Alan, welcome to 98FM. How are you?
Thanks, Jamie. I'm very good. How are you?
Good, thank you, Alan. Not too bad. Firstly, I know, like everybody else, you want to express your opening views and condolences to Izzy's family. Awful news that we heard late on Tuesday night.
Absolutely tragic news. One of the physiotherapist who works with the senior team, Tony McCarthy, and also works with Shamrock Rovers, was actually present, and he had sent me a message to let me know what had happened. At that stage, I don't think it was clear whether the young boy had passed, but it's a tragic, really, a tragedy, really, and absolutely, I'd like to pass my condolences, and I'm sure anybody involved in football in Ireland, to Izzy's family and friends and his teammates, which I'm sure have been traumatised by this.
The scariest thing for me is, and as I said, I was at that match in 2015 when Shetemi Ayatigbo died, and you know, very quickly they had a defibrillator on the pitch, they had treatment to him, they had an ambulance there, and I know on Tuesday night in the case of Izzy, you mentioned Tony McCarthy, I think Dave Henderson from Bohemians, who's a very recently retired fireman, was there. I think there was a nurse who was a parent, one of the other kids there. They had a defibrillator, they had the ambulance, I believe they gave the kid an adrenaline shot, and nothing was able to save him. And that's the scariest thing, that anything you could think of to save somebody like that was there for Shay and for Izzy, and unfortunately they weren't able to be saved, which is the scary thing.
Absolutely, and I suppose this is not a common event. It's a very tragic event, but it's not a common event. And unfortunately, some of the causes for sudden cardiac death, we don't know what those causes are. So even when we screen players. And at the FAI, we've been screening our underage teams since 2008, both on the men's and women's side, from under 15 and under 17 level. You can't pick up everything, but obviously the attempt in screening is to pick up what we can and what we know. And unfortunately, in this situation, as it happens in other situations, the resuscitation, although it was all in place, it wasn't possible to save this young boy's life. You might remember Fabrice Muamba, who was playing with Bolton at the time. They spent a lot of time resuscitating him. I spoke to the doctor who was involved in that resuscitation, and they persisted because there was sign of life. I do know from talking to Tony that unfortunately this young lad's pulse wasn't there, so his chances of survival were obviously diminished greatly by that situation.
Yes, and certainly you would hope that Izzy himself knew nothing about what was happening to him and that sort of stuff as well. But obviously we're not going to speculate because we don't know yet about the exact cause of death. But Alan, you mentioned there about sudden cardiac death, and there's another phrase, SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. We've heard about brain aneurysms and heart attacks and different things. For people who aren't medical experts like me and like most of the listeners, just can you explain what sudden cardiac death and sudden adult death syndrome is? Because for many people, they hear the word used and they hear the person has died, but they don't really know what it is.
Yes. So I suppose, and again, you make a very good point, Jamie, the autopsy results really may help in deciding what was the exact cause in Izzy's death. It may not, unfortunately, because some of the causes are electrical disturbances for which you may find nothing at autopsy. So I suppose you could use the term sudden cardiac death and SADS interchangeably, really. We tend to use the term SADS in relation to death occurring in a younger population, probably up to 35 years of age. And the causes are many. I suppose sudden cardiac death, which is a much more common a situation that arises in the population in general. There are probably about 5,000 to 6,000 sudden cardiac deaths occurring in the overall population in Ireland every year. So they would arise from coronary artery disease in particular, and issues in relation to maybe high cholesterol and blood pressure. Whereas in the sudden adult death syndrome, it really refers to the younger athlete often, but not always, in which there are a number of well-recognized causes of sudden death, usually resulting in an abnormal rhythm disturbance, without complicating it, a disturbance called ventricular fibrillation, in which the heart is not pumping properly, and eventually the heart stops pumping. That can be triggered by a number of different things. Some electrical disturbances that are inherent in the person's heart, and there are some structural abnormalities that can trigger this as well. There's a condition called HOCM, hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, and that's another common cause of sudden adult death syndrome, although, as I said to you, that sudden adult death syndrome probably accounts for 50 to 60 deaths per year in Ireland. We don't have the exact figures, but extrapolating from those figures in Europe and in the UK, whereas the sudden cardiac death is a more generalized population cause of death, and a very common and preventable as well cause of death. So the SADS is a subgroup of that, and as I said, not a common cause, but a very tragic one, because it's usually occurring in young people who are fit and active, and people are left wondering, you know, how did this happen to a young, fit person?
Exactly, and I think, you know, Izzy passed away in the second half of the game on Tuesday night, and anybody who was at the match, I wasn't there myself, you know, if you'd asked them at half time, were they to say that somebody on the pitch within 20 minutes was going to drop to their death at the age of 16, they would have said absolutely not. And that's how sudden, and the word sudden is used in both sudden cardiac death and sudden adult death syndrome, but it is, Alan, so sudden that they're playing the football match and next of all they're just gone.
Yes, and I suppose that is why moving on to the resuscitation ability, I think we spoke off air, Jamie, that, you know, the basic life support techniques are life skills, not for doctors or nurses or paramedics. They're for everybody. They're for radio presenters, They're for coaches, players, referees, parents. It's a life skill and one that I think we should all try and learn. And you can do a refresher course every 2 years, and it gives you an opportunity when you have the equipment available that you can, you know, early defibrillation is the key in terms of saving lives. So whilst there has been a lot of, at the Football Association, we have placed we place a lot of resources in prevention and screening our underage and League of Ireland players. I firmly believe that the other end of that equation is adequate training in basic life support and resuscitation. And as you mentioned, I know David Henderson very well, played football with him going back when we were schoolboys. And David obviously is trained as an ambulance person. And Tony, we do an annual training course with all of our international staff, international team doctors and physios, so that our skills are brought up to speed. So in this situation, obviously the appropriate, as you mentioned earlier, resuscitation equipment and techniques were all available, but unfortunately the end was tragic. So the screening is one part of the equation, and the resuscitation is another very, very important part as well.
And Alan, it's, you know, if you look at you and the Ireland senior team, when yourself and Kieran Murray run onto the pitch, you've got three or four bags with you with everything you could need. If you need something else, you've got a signal or you've got a walkie-talkie, and you've got people, an ambulance, you know, on the pitch within seconds that can help. In the case of underage football and schoolboy football, that isn't always the case. There are some clubs that don't even have a first aid kit. There are other clubs who would have everything you can think of. Most clubs that I go to now do have a defibrillator, and they do have people trained to use it. For me, and we did a piece last year recently on concussion in rugby, and I was speaking to the doctor and I was saying, train the referees. Train every referee in the country in every sport in CPR. I don't know if there's enough money there, you know, to buy them all a defibrillator, but just maybe train them and maybe buy them a first aid bag with the basic stuff in it. If someone gets a bad cut or someone swallows their tongue or something happens, that at least, you know, every sporting match needs a referee, and therefore if the referee is trained, he can help, because and ironically he's going to be nearest probably to the person that gets hurt as well.
Well, I firmly believe, James, that it would be fantastic if the referees were trained in basic life support, because obviously the health and safety of the players is of paramount importance to the referee. And also I think the coaches, if you had the coaches of both teams meeting, I'm not talking about specifically the incident that occurred, but I'm talking about in general, where they met, obviously they made sure that they had the appropriate equipment, that they were both trained, and the referee. I think you're right. It's the bottom of the pyramid that we need to be talking about, whether that's in Phoenix Park or the AUL, somewhere in Galway, Donegal, Kerry, it doesn't matter. Throughout the country. So going back to what I was saying earlier, this is a life skill that we should all be learning. In fact, in some countries, they're taught it in school.
Dr. Alan Byrne, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jamie. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Yes, if you think of some of the subjects you learn in school that you'll never, ever, ever use in your life again, first aid would certainly be one that I should definitely add to the list. Dr. Alan Byrne there, the medical director with the FAI and also from the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. If you want more information on what Alan was speaking about, the Cry Ireland website is cry.ie, and the Irish Heart Foundation as well is a great website to have a read and have a look. It's irishheart.ie. We'll continue our tribute to Izzy Dizou next on 98FM, and we're joined by Lola Ayatigbo, whose son Shay also died while playing football aged 16 back in May 2015. We're back in a second.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Just after 9:45 Sunday morning in Dublin, you're very welcome back. It's Jamie Moore here. Now we're going to continue remembering Izzy Dizou, who died on Tuesday night while playing for Shelburne. And we're joined now by Lola Ayatigbo, whose son Shay collapsed and died aged 16 while playing for Belvedere against St Kevin's Boys back a couple of years ago on the 31st of May 2015. I met up with Lola in her house in Donabate on Friday. Lola, thanks so much for having the time to have a chat to me. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
Lola, thank you. Tell me about Tuesday evening when you first heard that something had happened to Izzy playing for Shelburne.
Actually, my youngest son heard about it, and he came to my room and he told my mom the same thing that happened to Shay, happened to one boy. And I said, "You serious?" He said, "Yes." And from there on, and it was just, I was shaking, really totally shaking. He brought all the memory back to me, and I just want to hug that woman. I just want to be there for her because I know how hard it is, and the hope that you have for your children and living home and not coming back home. It is a terrible news for any parent to go through. or to hear about. So as for me, I felt for the family so much because I actually, the next day, I was driving all over the place trying to find that woman. Just someone said she lived in Tala. I just want to be there just to tell her, you know what? Just going to be okay. If the pain, you know, people tell you the pain is going to go. No, I don't think so. But this, I don't know if she have other children, you know, which is they become more important. They will become more important to her because as life goes on, you know, there's nothing anybody can do to bring them back. But as for me, I want to know the reason why this is happening to the children, whether yellow, green, black, or wherever you might have come from, there's still someone's children. And we're losing our children for what we don't know anything about. I want to find an answer. What can we do to save our children? They love this. They love the sport. And by doing this sport, they have to enjoy it, not to have fear in their mind. I could just imagine those boys, they were there watching their friends collapse. How hard, and I know Shetemi friends went through this, and they went through the bad way. And for me, I felt for each one of those boys that was there when this happened, you know. So this, we need to know what is going on. Every vibrator, is it what you call it, vibrator? They need to have this, every small club. If we have to go out there, do something, help the club to be able to have this, they need to have it.
Yeah, it is. It's an important thing. And I know from speaking to you on the phone during the week, yeah, Lola, that you actually went to Tala, you drove and you tried to find Izzy's parents, which, yeah, is so nice. But you weren't able to find them just yet. But we're going to try and help you find them this week.
Please, please. I just want to be, just to tell her, just to give her a hug, just to hold her, because it run deep. It run deep. So deep than anybody can think of. I mean, you can see so many people, so much around you. And to me, that time, everybody become like a hand. That's the way I see them. I couldn't see clearly. And I thought, I cannot live without Shetemi. I thought I could not live without Shetemi. And I'll continue to say, thank God for my community. And that woman needs someone, need people to be there, that community need to rally around her, because it's not really an easy thing. Please, they need to be there for her, because it's very hard. It is very hard.
And if you had the chance to speak to the parents, and I know you will, and I know they have other children, yeah, if they're listening to this now and you haven't seen them yet, what would you say to them? Because they're only less than a week out from what happened, and they would have, I'm not sure if they were at the match, or I know when Shay died, you weren't at the match, and no, you got a phone call, and yeah, you had to rush to the hospital.
Yeah. You know, it is a shock to the system, a shock to your brain, and even your brain, you don't want to accept in your head that this is really happening to you. And I would tell them, for me, because I'm a Christian, I lay all to God, but I fight with my faith every day in and day out about how I'm going to live without my son. And when I think about my other two, I know if I go down, they will go down with me. So I need to gather all my strength to be able to be there for my other children. Because if I've already lose one, I don't want to lose another two. Another one, I have two left. I don't want to lose any one of those. If I don't stand up, seek counseling, thank God for my community, thank God for my friends, my faith. If I don't go through all those things, look into it, I won't be where I am today.
Yes, and we're here in your lovely new house here in Donabate, and your community here and everybody around you, you know, was there for you when Shay died, and his football club Belvedere, and yeah, his old club Home Farm, and everybody was there. Lola, just bring me back to May the 31st, 2015, when you had heard that Shay was going to play a big match for Belvedere against St Kevin's, their big rivals.
Yeah.
It was a really important match. I was at the match, and on the morning of the match, Shay went off from your old house, not this house, yeah, your old house, and he was getting ready to go and play in another important match for his team.
Yeah. And I asked him, I said, Shay, can you give today to me? Today's my birthday. My families are here. to celebrate my birthday. And he said, no, I'm not going to let my mate down. I can't let my mate down. And I was very annoyed with him. I said, well, go and play your football. And I said, Mommy, I have to play this match. We have to beat St. Kevin. He was so determined to beat their club is going to beat St. Kevin because he enjoyed what he does.
You were at your birthday celebrations that Sunday and you get a phone call to say you've got to come to the hospital now.
Yeah. Oh, she's supposed to meet us there later in the evening because that's what he said. He said, I'm going to come back. I'm going to rest for a while but I join you in the evening. It wasn't even the evening when I heard about someone call me around past 12, I think.
Yeah.
And going to the hospital was like, oh, don't worry, he's going to get up. Oh, he's just tired. And they said, we have to talk to you. And I said, just let me see him. Let me see. And he said, we really need to talk to you. And that one, I didn't register to my mind what she was trying to say. And she said, they've tried everything. He's not responded to it. I still didn't get it. And I said, come on, it's going to be okay. He's just there. But I saw him. So sad.
So just while Lola takes a minute, for people who weren't at the match, it was Belvedere against St. Kevin's. Early enough in the game, there was an injury to a St. Kevin's player with an ankle injury, and Shea went over to the Belvedere dugout to get a drink and just fell. And straight away to St. Kevin's physio, whose name is Kieran Heffernan, and I know you've spoken to Kieran since. He was straight over. They had a defibrillator from the clubhouse straight over. The ambulance came and Shea was taken away. And at that stage, us at the game, we didn't know either what had happened. And Lola, you had got to the hospital and you'd asked the nurses that you needed to go in and see Shea. And when you went in to see him, you still thought, and I know a number of your family still thought, we can help get him better.
Yeah, actually, we still believe because we believe in God. We believe he's going to do something. You can't just take him. That's my only answer. You just can't take him. I left the Beaumont Hospital around 9 o'clock. Since it's happening, we've just been praying for God to do something. It's very hard to let go of your son, of your daughter, of your child, just to see, just go like that. And saying this, so many people go through so many things. It doesn't have to be because it happened on the feet. But every parent, no matter where it happened, it doesn't, it's a pain that roots so deep that years doesn't even cut it. It doesn't take care of it. But as a woman being, we know, you hear so many things happen to other people and you said, oh, I feel sorry. And maybe a day or two, you forget about it. You live with a nightmare. But I don't want anybody to live with a nightmare. I want people to look at it like, I have a good memory of my son. I don't have to look so far before I think of him. Every day, I don't need to think so far. Everything will remind me of him. If I've heard about this before, my God, I know. Shall we be in the doctor every 2 months, No, I'll be pushing it that way. If I've really thought, because when things doesn't happen to you, you never really think deep about it. So I'm sorry for the family, and may so rest in peace. But if the mother want to talk day, night, evening, my number, I'll give it to someone to give it to her, to tell her it's okay for whatever she feel. If she feel angry, if she's angry with the club, if she's angry with herself, I was angry with myself for not going there with Shea that day. Thinking if they were there, maybe my reaction, hearing my voice or something like that, will I bring him back? So I don't know if she was there or she's not, or he, father was there or his father is not. I don't know. But the first thing you have to lose as you going through the grief is the anger, because the anger will make you to resent yourself and feel guilty and hide the pain. You will hide the pain from other people not to see. And people need to be there for her, and she needs to share.
Yes, incredible. So from Lola Ayatigbo, Shay's mum, who died back in 2015, and Lola wants to find Izzy's mum. So if Izzy's mum is listening, or if anybody knows of her, you can send us in a text or a WhatsApp on 0877 98 98 98, and we'll hopefully put them in touch. And Izzy's funeral is on next Saturday, which is just a day before Christmas Eve, so our thoughts and prayers remain with him and his family.
98 FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Back live this Sunday morning from 9.
98 FM.